Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Every time I host a true crime case, generally my focus is on the victim or victims, especially if it's an unsolved case. My goal is always to bring the center of attention back to where it needs to be, which is on the crime that happened. In several of the cases we've covered, the media tends to put the focal point on the suspect and their name, not the victims. The victims is the one we need to remember. In this episode, we have two victims that I refuse to forget. Two victims left this world too early, and one suspect that's behind bars but maintains his innocence to this day. Unfortunately, all we have to go on in many cases is the suspect's version of events and the forensic evidence to find the truth. Listen in and let us know what you think. Welcome to another intriguing episode of All Things Mysterious, the podcast where all the realms of true crime, supernatural, and the unexplained converge. I'm your host, Jordan.
I'm Matt.
We're ready to plunge into today's fascinating mysteries. Let's dive right in. It was Christmas Eve, 2002, in Modesto, California. For married couple Lacey and Scott Peterson, everything was supposedly normal. Lacey is about 8 months pregnant with their first child, a boy they planned to name Connor. According to Scott, Lacey had gotten up around 7, ate breakfast, mopped the floors, planned on making a dish for Christmas, walking the dog, and around 10 a.m. that morning, Scott decided to go fishing at the Berkeley Marina. At 2:15 that afternoon, Scott called Lacey and she didn't answer, so he left her a voicemail saying this. Hey beautiful, I just left a message at home. It's 2:15, I'm leaving Berkeley. I won't be able to get to Vela Farms to get that basket for Papa. I was hoping you would get this message and go on out there. I'll see you in a bit, sweetie. Love ya, bye. He left around 3:30, got gas, and arrived home between 4:30 and 5 p.m., finding Lacey not home. And their dog was in the backyard with the leash still attached to the collar. The mop bucket was full of dirty water, and not thinking too much of it, he dumped it out. Remember, Lacey is 8 months pregnant and couldn't lift. Lacey's car was still in the driveway, but considering she had plans to cook, he figured she was with her mom preparing dinner for the next night. The only thing he found odd was the leash being on the dog. He then put his clothes in the wash, they were wet and gross from fishing, and listened to the messages on the answering machine. That's when he heard not only his own message to her, but one from her stepfather asking about bringing something to their home if she stopped by. This is when he realized she may not be with them and called to check. When her parents confirmed she was not there, the search began, and an hour later, Lacey was officially listed as a missing person.
I remember this case, and this guy's a scumbag.
Oh, he truly is.
I don't say that lightly either.
Now, don't go into spoilers yet if people haven't heard it, but yes, he really is, though.
I'd find it really hard to believe if people haven't heard this case, because it was so much televised. That doesn't make any sense.
So much televised.
You know what I mean.
It was. It was everywhere on the media. You could not escape it.
I'd say especially anybody around our age, because I think this is probably one of those true crime cases that a lot of us heard when we were younger. I know this is probably the very first one that I really listened to, like live as it was happening. At least the first one that I remember. But this guy, I don't remember all the details. I just remember some of them, and I'm sure you'll get into it here in a little bit. Yeah, this guy was a scumbag. He was definitely a Chester.
There's just something about Scott. Like, the very beginning of the case, when I go over things, you'll see that everything looks pretty normal, right? And that's how the case starts out. Everything looks, like I said, pretty normal. He goes fishing, everything's fine. He literally has receipts for everything. Everything looks great. But the more that we get into this case, I think you guys will agree, he looks pretty sketchy.
Yeah, 100%. I don't like the whole, you know, if a wife disappears, it's usually the husband. I know a lot of times it is, but I think a lot of times it isn't, and they still end up getting charged for it. Or vice versa, you know, if a husband disappears, just because that's usually the easiest suspect.
That night, police and detectives entered their home, finding nothing amiss. The first person they really question is Scott, and he has proof of every place he's been, but detectives immediately don't think Scott is acting quite right. He didn't seem worried enough, he was too calm, etc. The next couple of days, detectives searched the house more thoroughly with a warrant. They also start searching more of the waters Scott fished in, but more comes out pretty quickly. At this point, Scott is still looking pretty clean. Everything he said has had proof to back it up on his end, aside from some small details. But we find out that he's been having an affair with a woman named Amber Frey. Amber saw the news and called police to let them know she had been in a relationship with Scott for about 5 to 6 weeks. He told her he was single. Police use this to their advantage and have her record their calls. On December 31st, 2002, at this point, Lacey has been missing for 8 days, a candlelight vigil is held for Lacey. During the vigil, Scott calls Amber, pretending to be in Europe, acting like everything is perfectly fine. Amber deserves an award for her acting.
So, I will play devil's advocate here. Just because he was cheating doesn't necessarily mean he's a murderer. Obviously, that is a very good motive, but it doesn't mean that he's a murderer.
I actually have to agree with you on that. Just because you are a slime bag doesn't mean that you're a murdery scrime bag, you know? It doesn't mean that. It just means you're a terrible human being.
Yeah, and I agree with it. I kind of hate how it equates to, you know, if they're cheating, then obviously they're capable of murder, because those are very two different things. But I will say this is probably the least convincing evidence. However, he's definitely a scumbag, at the very least, just for the cheating part. Because how the hell do you cheat on your wife, especially when she's pregnant with your kid?
8 months pregnant at that. Like, I don't get it. But I don't get a lot of things.
But anyways, scumbag, we already know that, so let's find out more.
Here's where things get weird. Out of the blue, Scott calls Amber on January 6, 2003, and not only admits that he's not single, that he has a wife, but that she's missing and he is the Scott on the news. Amber, my personal hero, played her part and asked questions but got no real answers. Now, I'm aware this episode's about Lacey, but seriously, I just love Amber right now, because on January 23rd, she announced in a press conference that she had been having an affair with Scott Peterson. She announced to everybody that he told her he was single, and just like that, his family went from supporting and believing Scott's innocence to fully believing he was guilty of her disappearance. Boom.
So, again, devil's advocate. So in cases like this, obviously, there's a thing as muddying the waters too much. And I think, honestly, that's what this press conference did. Because, you know, obviously the police needed to know that he was having an affair, because obviously that could be a motive. I don't think there was really any need to do a press conference on this. Because all that's going to do is change public perception. Which, obviously, public perception, when you get into, like, jury pools and stuff, is very important. That's why often it's hard to get a fair trial, especially when something's still publicized, as this case was.
It was. In fact, I'm going to skip a little bit, but during the trial, they actually had to move it to a completely different county.
Yeah.
Because they were worried about the jurors, and yeah. I don't blame them.
Yeah, I mean, problem is with national news and, you know, how news is, especially in the last 20 years or more. That's why they used to have the, you know, change county thing, because usually news was very much localized. So you could, if the county you were in was tainted with bad news coverage and stuff, you could very much go to a different county and it'd be like starting over fresh.
Basically, yes.
nowadays that's not really possible, which I think it has very much a detrimental effect on justice itself, because it's hard to get a fair trial if people have already made up their mind before the trial. And we know, because we've talked about this before, people are biased. They're gonna go into that trial, you know, thinking he's a scumbag, hating him. And I'll be honest, I haven't really looked into this case since I first heard it, so maybe I did the same thing. Maybe I based how guilty he is based on my personal feelings of him, which I guess we'll find out at the end of this episode.
Well, we will. And I'll be honest, I do feel fairly biased towards Scott. But the more that I actually researched and looked things up, the more I was like, maybe I really don't know a lot about this case. Because, yeah, he does look guilty in my eyes, but there's not that much evidence.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you seeing him guilty just because he's guilty, or is it just your biases based on his personality and the type of person he is?
One of the reasons that I did the case, right there.
Because like I said, I'm not going to change the fact that he's a scumbag, because he obviously is. My only hesitation is, you know, is he guilty? Did he do this? Or did he just, you know, get the short end of the stick, basically? And that's the other thing, is we've talked about this in numerous cases before. The police often will find the easiest suspect for them to investigate, and then they won't go any further than that.
And that's one of the things that I was looking at when I looked into this, because they went into this and they basically just honed straight in on Scott. They came in and they just went, wife's missing, husband. And we'll go into something at the end of my episode that I don't think was looked into very much, if at all. But like, they just straight to Scott, and it seems like nothing else. Now, I don't know if I'm not looking enough, but from all of everything else that I'm looking into, no, they didn't. And if he truly is innocent, they didn't look at literally almost anything else. Nothing. They just went, yep, that's it.
That's honestly mostly standard protocol with these cases, is you start with investigating the significant other. If they don't seem like a suspect, then you move on. But you get this part where obviously he seemed very guilty, at least in their eyes, because cheating can be a motive for murder, because it has been a motive for murder in the past.
It can. But the thing about that is, obviously it'd been several weeks and nothing really had happened up until that point, unless maybe it did and we don't know about it.
And here's the thing to me that doesn't make sense. So usually in these cases where a spouse cheats and then they end up killing their wife or husband or whatever, it's usually later on when the cheating relationship goes on for longer and they want to be with that person instead of their wife or husband. But like you said, I believe they were only together for a few weeks.
Yeah, weeks.
So to me, it doesn't seem like he would have been willing to murder his wife after a few weeks with this person.
No, they'd only seen each other like a few times. They'd called each other a few times. They'd seen each other in person a few times. It was so new.
Most cheaters basically want their cake and eat it too. They want to stay married while maintaining this relationship with this other person. Obviously, she was pissed. I get that. I think that's the only reason she did that press conference, not to get justice, but to kind of embarrass him and get back at him for lying to her. Although, I am going to say that I don't think she was completely innocent in this whole thing either.
How do you think she wasn't completely innocent?
I think she at least had some idea that he was not single. I'm telling you, women are smart. They can pick up on signs that other people cannot.
Maybe, but if you've got your blinders on, trust me, you look past it.
I'm not saying that she consciously knew that he was married or whatever. But I do think that there was probably signs that she saw that she didn't realize at the time.
It's possible, but still, it was so new. I think give it a little bit, like, if this hadn't happened so early, I think she would have figured it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, but let's be honest, guys aren't usually that good at hiding cheating.
That's true.
I'm kind of going into this like, okay, does the affair have anything to do with the murder? I don't think so, just because obviously it's very new. I don't see why he would jump to murder that quickly, unless there was underlying issues that we just didn't know. And by underlying issues, you know, like fighting, abuse, anything like that.
Well, and that's the thing. Everyone said that it was a normal, healthy marriage.
So then my thing is, does this cheating help with the case, or does it actually, in essence, hinder the case? And I think, honestly, it just hinders the case, because now you're so focused on one person that you're not going to find out if he really did it. And if he didn't do it, then who did it? And that's the kind of downside of this, is, you know, she got back at him. She definitely did, because he's in prison now.
Yep.
But we don't know for sure if he actually did it or what. I think that's the problem with just focusing on one suspect. I think even if you have a suspect, just to make sure that you cover all your bases, you should still investigate other suspects. I hate this idea that, you know, oh, it's definitely him, so we're not going to even look at any other kind of suspects or anything. I think that's just lazy police work, and I think it really hinders the justice system.
I have to agree entirely.
I don't know. Let's move on.
Unfortunately, no major leads nor evidence were found for a few months. Media and police followed Scott, and he even bleached his hair to try and hide from the attention. When questioned about it, he said he was just trying to put the focus on Lacey and not him. But I'm a little skeptical, because on April 13th, Connor, their unborn son, was found in San Francisco Bay. Lacey was found a day later around the same spot. Their remains were so degraded that medical examiners couldn't find a cause of death. The evidence found against him were only these: 5 roughly homemade concrete anchors and a single hair of Lacey's on a set of pliers in the boat. On April 18th, the day both bodies were positively ID'd, Scott was arrested and charged with their murder. He pleaded not guilty. On November 12th, Scott was found guilty of first and second degree murder and sentenced to the death penalty. However, it was soon overturned, and he is now sentenced to life in prison.
That's not enough evidence.
There's almost no evidence at all. Now, here's the thing that gets me. Lacey, we know for sure, had been, like, on the boat, around the boat. Obviously, her hair and everything's going to be all over it. Listen, I shed hair like crazy, like everywhere. My hair is going to be on everything. I'm sitting at least 3 feet across from Matt right now. I would not be surprised if somehow my hair was on Matt.
So to illustrate this point, when we went ghost hunting, we took my car. I am still finding Jordan's hair in my car. And that was, what, 8 months ago?
Somewhere around that, yeah. I was in your car for, like, what, 2 days?
Yeah, yeah, and there's still hair. I'll randomly find, like, hair on my shirt. I'm like, what the freak? And there were just hair all over the place. So, obviously, they own the boat. She's been on the boat before. It'd be kind of weird if she never was on the boat. So, the fact that there's hair on there, to me, is not evidence of anything. All it does is prove that she was on the boat at some point. Because one thing I do know is you can't tell how long a hair has been there or, you know, when it was shed. So, that's no evidence. I don't understand the homemade concrete blocks.
They were like anchors, which you're going to probably have in a boat, I would think.
So where do they find those? On the boat or?
They were kind of in the place where he like housed and kept the boat.
Oh.
Like the storage thing that he kept the boat in.
So what, they were just assuming that those were what tied down the body?
I would think so, but I would think that, you know, those would be found like, I don't know, with the body or in the marina or in the San Francisco Bay. I would feel like if those were real, I don't want to say real evidence, like they're not real evidence, but if you have a boat, you're going to have some sort of anchor.
Yeah.
I would think.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to. And I mean, if he's in a marina, obviously other people are going to have access to him. But I just don't understand what they even have to do with the crime. I mean, them being in the marina doesn't really say anything.
It doesn't. I think, okay, so I didn't want to get super into it, but when they found the bodies, they were in really, really, really bad condition. Lacey was just a torso. So they assume that she was dropped down with weights or something. I don't know if they think that those were like, I don't know, test weights or something. But I don't think that they would be still with the boat. I would think that they would be in the San Francisco Bay.
Yeah, which they would never find because that's a big area.
It is. And they did search the waters. They did search the bay a couple of times, actually, which I'm sure is pretty difficult, if not impossible, to do and find everything. But, you know, considering how many different people are out there with different boats and everything else, you're not going to find everything. And, I mean, Connor was just in this bad of shape, which is awful. But the thing is, you don't know exactly how long they've been out there. You don't know what conditions 100% the bodies have been in when it comes to like the wildlife out there as well. So you don't know exactly if they were tied down. You don't know if fish and everything else have been getting into it. You don't know.
Yeah. So if this is the evidence that they had, I don't know how in the hell they got a conviction because there's nothing there. Like, I could say without a doubt, with the caveat that unless there's other evidence that they submitted at the trial that we just don't know about.
Which is a possibility.
This was 100% based on the fact that he was a scumbag cheater. This was not anything to do with the fact if he murdered his wife or not.
There's only one other thing I can think of, and that is when he told Amber at one point that he quote unquote lost his wife. And this is before he confessed to her that he had a wife. He said that he lost his wife. And that's the only thing I can think of is her witness confession, you know, that preemptively saying lost. But even then, that's extremely weak.
He's always trying to lie, you know. But again, that does not mean he's a murderer.
But everything at this point is very circumstantial. I will say, obviously, the bodies were found in the San Francisco Bay, which is in the same marina that he went fishing in. The thing is, like, where his boat would have gone in the water and everything else, like, he couldn't back up the boat. Like, people would have seen him have to put the body in the boat and everything else. There's not, like, a place he could have been hidden away, and it was in broad daylight. And I don't know. I'm not 100% saying that he's innocent, but I'm also saying that I don't think we necessarily have the evidence, and we still managed to get a guilty verdict.
Yeah, that's based solely on the fact that he's a scumbag, though. I guarantee that those jurors already went in there with the bias that he was guilty.
Yeah, they had some sort of preconceived notion for sure.
Now, my question is, he obviously went fishing that morning. Do we have any witnesses that say that she was alive when he left the house?
We have people that saw her walking the dog.
Okay, that was when he was already on the boat.
Somewhere around that. I don't know if it was at the same time, but it was when he was out of the house.
So my first thing is, obviously, would be that was she alive when he left or when he was going to the boat or going fishing, whatever. Because the only way that it would make sense that he's able to do this is if he murdered her in the middle of the night, went and put her on the boat, came back home, and then went to the boat in the morning. Because I'm sure that they have video surveillance, you know, because those boats are expensive.
Very.
So my guess is they have video surveillance of him going to the marina and going to the boat.
I don't know if they have video, but I know they have, like, the ticket and everything else because he had to buy, like, a ticket to go out there and everything else.
I would be shocked if they didn't have video surveillance of him going to the boat. Honestly, it'd make more sense to me that they did have it. They just never submitted it as evidence because it goes against their case.
Fair.
Which prosecutors have been known to do. But, I mean, that would be my first thing is you got to get a timeline of, you know, when you think she died. Which obviously, with the body being degraded, you're not going to be able to get very accurate. But you can at least see when the last time somebody saw her alive was. And if someone saw her, you know, in the morning walking the dog, then that's a good indication that she was probably alive at that point. And then work from there. I think that my opinion on this was based on the fact that he was cheating. Because this happened, what, in 2000?
Late 2002.
Yeah. I think my notion was based on my opinion of him that he was a scumbag. And I'm okay changing that. I think that they definitely fucked up. I think they got it in their head that he was guilty, and that's all they care about. I think they definitely need to reopen the case and look at it, actually do their jobs.
What if I told you there's an angle that people haven't really looked at yet?
Wouldn't be surprising in this case, honestly.
So what if Scott didn't do it? From the very beginning, everyone focused on him, but there's actually another player in the game. There was a burglary across the street from the Peterson home. Remember Scott coming home to find the dog with the leash still on in the backyard? Over 20 people witnessed Lacey on a walk with her dog, but none of them witnessed her coming home. Was Lacey abducted while walking her dog? A van was found burnt down near their home. Inside it was a mattress, and part of that mattress that had not burned revealed a bloodstain. Unfortunately, there was not enough evidence to find DNA. The burglary next door was supposedly on the morning of the 26th. However, people believe that would have been impossible with the amount of media presence outside the Peterson home at the time. There was even a call that morning to 911 from a man witnessing a pregnant woman getting pushed into a van by two men. The two men that were arrested for the burglary, Stephen Todd and Donald Pierce, however, were extremely cooperative because they didn't want their name anywhere near the investigation for Lacey Peterson and were eventually supposedly cleared. But many people still have their doubts.
Okay, so just something I was just thinking about. On TV shows and stuff where someone's significant other or family member or whatever is murdered, and then they'll run from the police to try to investigate it themselves. I always thought this was kind of unrealistic, but at this point, I finally get it.
Yeah, I do. I 100% get it.
Because honestly, if my significant other was murdered, I would probably do the same thing just because I do not trust the police to get past me. Because, I mean, how many times have they not been able to do that? And then the person who actually killed them gets away with it. So I 100% get that now. However, I'm not going to say these two are guilty, but they definitely seem a lot more guilty than he is.
Right. I mean, there's literally a 911 call from a man witnessing a pregnant woman getting pushed into the van. And authorities are just like, nah.
Well, my guess is at that point, they already had their, you know, quote unquote killer in Scott. And I mean, say what you want, but we all know that they basically stopped investigating at that point.
I feel like they stopped investigating the second that they saw the husband. They were just like, that's it. And we're just looking straight into that guy.
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, because honestly, to me, I don't think they would have stopped investigating until they found out he was cheating. I think once they found out that he was cheating, in their minds at least, he was guilty.
Yeah, they found their motive. There it was.
But in my opinion, looking up through all this, I just don't see any evidence of his guilt. He's definitely a scumbag. I'll 100% agree with that. But being a scumbag doesn't mean that you're a murderer.
I have to agree. I just don't find the hard evidence here. I just don't. I'm not saying 100% that he's guilty or he's innocent, but I don't see the evidence. Was he at the marina? Yes, but we knew he was there. I also don't see anything else tying this all in.
My thing is, I'm not going to say if he's guilty or innocent of the crime. My question is, there enough evidence to find him guilty of the crime?
They found him guilty. I don't know if I would have, but they sure did.
Yeah, but like I said, I fully believe that was based on bias alone. Because unless there's evidence that they're just not reporting, which I don't think, because as far as I remember, this case was actually televised.
Huge.
So I don't think they would have been able to, you know, have evidence that just wasn't reported, because obviously the whole case was basically on TV constantly. So I don't see the evidence. I think that they definitely screwed up. At the very least, they need to open it up and reinvestigate.
I have to agree, because I don't feel like it was the fairest trial he ever got. And I don't know if he'll be able to get a new one, but I just don't feel like it was all that fair.
No, because aside from someone admitting to the murder and confessing to it, they're not going to open up because they're not going to want to say that they were wrong. It is very hard, even with a confession, to get a case reopened. How many times have we seen new evidence came to light that proved or, you know, at least put doubt? In fact, a few years ago, there was a death penalty case where there was new evidence that came to light, but the courts refused to hear it, and the guy ended up being executed. The courts are so worried about, you know, making it look like they messed up that they will literally let people die just to, you know, hide that fact, and it's frustrating.
It's frustrating, and it's disappointing.
Because it does nothing to help the victims. It does nothing to put trust in the justice system. They need to do better. Plain and simple, they just need to do better.
I agree.
Now that I'm thoroughly pissed off.
So between the theories, Lacey and Connor still lost their lives. But who is truly to blame? Was it a burglary gone wrong? Or was Scott Peterson tired of being married, planning on escaping it and being a free man again? People are still divided. What do you think? Thank you for joining us on this journey through all things mysterious. Your engagement is what makes this so rewarding. If you've enjoyed uncovering these mysteries with us, please show your support by liking, subscribing, and following us on your favorite listening platform. For more intriguing content and ways to stay connected, don't forget to check us out on our links in the description below. Your involvement is the key to unlocking more thrilling mysteries.
As always, we keep you guessing.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.